cost to do that. We should have built the first dollar.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Environment, Energy, Natural Resources Budget Division Subcommittee on Natural Resources. It's 22nd, it's just about a few minutes after 1 o'clock. And we're in room 318. Those of you around the table here, we have a couple of documents in here that for you to have as background. We have the Senate file which established the Heritage, the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council. So you have that. We have the actual article in the Minnesota Constitution, which was passed last fall. We have the website and the members of the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council. And finally, you have some process papers that Dr. Kilgore will deal with in a few minutes. So, I think that we all understand kind of what happened last year. There was some anticipation and with the idea of possibly doing a constitutional amendment, 3/8 of 1%, with 1/8 going to habitat, 1/8 going to water, and 1/8 going to a combination of arts and state parks and trails. And of course that passed, and I think that those of us dealing with the 1/8 that's going to habitat are kind of proud of the fact that we actually set up a process to deal with that particular amount of money. So today we have Dr. Mike Kilgore, who's the chairman now of the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council, and he's going to come up and present to us, because this particular committee will be the first committee to meet with the advice of that council, and we just want to kind of get an idea what the process is going to be. So, Dr. Kilgore he'll introduce those members of the council that are with him. But Dr. Kilgore, of course, is from Lionel Lakes. He's associate professor of natural resource economics and policy at the University of Minnesota. He's also he also has a cabin on Burroughs Lake north of Grand Rapids, which gives him some particular insight to the forest in Minnesota. So, without further ado, Dr. Kilgore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Mike Kilgore, and I just want to start by saying, Senator Saxog, thank you in particular for your leadership on this and some of the prior efforts that have led up to where we are today with the Outdoor Heritage Council, as well as other members, Senator Chaudhry and others who were really helpful. Senator Saxog and I had the great opportunity to talk about these issues related to conservation governance 2 years ago with the Conservation Legacy Council. We met in this room for most of our meetings, so it was a great opportunity to work with Senator Saxog on common interests that we have, which is habitat and conservation. As was mentioned, I'm a faculty member in the Department of Forest Resources at the University of Minnesota. We're in St. Paul, about 6 miles from here. My area of focus is in natural resource, economics, policy, and administration. My other part of my day job while being a faculty member there is I'm the director of our graduate studies program, which has over 100 students that are pursuing master's and PhD degrees in forest resources, wildlife ecology management, wood and paper science. So collectively, we look at the university's programs through its forest resources department and affiliated programs is providing that education and training for our next generation of natural resource managers and scientists. What I'd like to do today is just give you a very brief update as to where we are with the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council, the process that we are undertaking to get you the first set of recommendations. A little bit about the makeup of the council you have. I believe in front of you a handout of the 12 members that were appointed to the council. You can see they're equally split appointments between the governor, the Senate, and the House, four legislators, and eight citizens. Just a commentary, we've had just a couple of meetings, and I'm extremely impressed with the quality of the makeup of the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council members. We have very diverse backgrounds on that council. We have people who are actively involved in conservation in many different respects. Some have planted trees, restored habitat. Others have been leaders of major conservation and wildlife organizations like the Nature Conservancy, Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, Minnesota Waterfowl Association, folks that have been involved in major conservation initiatives like conservation easements. So overall, a very diverse but excellent group of individuals. They're all excited to be part of the Outdoor Heritage Council, but they're more importantly, they're all committed to improving Minnesota's fish and game habitat. We do have a couple other members of the council here, Senator Ingebrigtsen, who serves on your committee, Mr. Chair, as well as Bob Schroeder. Am I missing any others? And our interim executive director, Bill Becker, from the Department of Natural Resources, who we'll talk about in a bit, who is providing the administrative support for the council is here as well. The Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council mission is to advise you, the legislature, on appropriations from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. It's very clear and a very focused mission. We are advisory to you, the legislative body. And per the state constitution, the uses of money that are deposited in the Outdoor Heritage Fund are very explicit and they're very clear. Restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. So what you will be seeing in front of you in April will be a set of recommendations to do just that. Those recommendations need to be focused on protection, enhancement, restoration of habitat, prairies, wetlands, and forests, which will be a challenge given all of the ideas and the needs in conservation. The Constitution is clear about what the uses of these funds are for. In terms of our activities to date, by state statute, we were required to meet by December 1st, which we did. That was our first meeting. It was a get-together, get-to-know-each-other meeting. They appointed me as the interim chair. We were briefed on the proposed revenue that will be coming into the Outdoor Heritage Fund, which is estimated to be around $78 million in fiscal 10. Will likely decrease with the new revenue forecast. Briefed on the open meeting laws. We've now elected a slate of officers through June, myself as the chair, Jim Cox, who is the vice chair, Darby Nelson is the council secretary, and David Hartwell is the treasurer. So we have a slate of officers that, as well as Representative Rick Hansen, who's representing the legislative interest on the council, that is our executive committee. So we've met three times. One of the most significant things, besides deciding how we want to operate, is to set forth a process to get a set of recommendations back to you by April 1, which is our legislative mandate. By April 1, we are to recommend to you appropriations from 2010, fiscal year 2010, from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And I believe, Mr. Chair, there is a five-page, or at least maybe a copy front and back, but a document that describes the process that the Outdoor Heritage Council has developed for getting us to that point of making recommendations. And so I just want to call your attention to a few key things of that pertaining to that process. First thing we need to do is let you know that we are very committed to getting those recommendations. We all believe it is very doable. It's going to take a lot of work and a lot of help from our partners, but we will be getting you recommendations by April 1. Our schedule is to meet every other Monday throughout the remaining months of January, February, March, so we have five meetings remaining, and we've divided our work into three tasks. The first task that we've already started is to get the Outdoor Heritage Council members up to speed, so to speak, on the different conservation plans, wildlife habitat plans that exist in the state. We started that process at our last meeting. We had presentations regarding the LCCMR, Statewide Conservation and Preservation Plan. We had, Mr. Chair, a report from Dave Zentner regarding the Conservation Legacy Council plan, the plan that you and I were part of, as well as other statewide strategic plans. We are going to continue that discussion next Monday with presentations from a number of folks on more tactical conservation plans, plans related to specific habitat. It could be, for example, a wetland restoration plan. It could be for asset management, for example, a plan on WMA, Wildlife Management Area Acquisition, as well as species-specific plans, pheasant, long-range pheasant management plans. As well, we have asked folks to come to the council meeting on Monday to talk about how we deliver conservation in Minnesota. So council members understand when we talk about acquiring a land for public purposes for wildlife, habitat, and conservation, what does that entail? Who's involved? What does it cost? What's the process? What are the timelines? Similarly, if we're going to be buying less than a fee simple right in that property, namely a conservation easement, how does that take place? Who's involved in that process? What are the associated costs, timelines, and so forth? We also are going to have presentations about how we do restoration work and improvement work on habitat, fish and game habitat in the state. Who's involved in those processes? What does it take? What are the necessary permits that are involved, the timelines and costs? Again, all in the effort of trying to educate members, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee about how conservation is delivered in Minnesota. So that will be a major focus of our discussion this coming Monday, the 26th. We are also, as a second major part of our work between now and April, is to seek stakeholder input. One of the principles that we operate under is a very transparent process. So the public and the stakeholders involved know what we're doing, know where we plan to go, know what deliberations are occurring. The Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources has held 7 regional meetings around the state to get input. They presented the results of those stakeholder meetings around the state about the priorities for conservation to the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council a week and a half ago. We provide opportunities at every council meeting for the public to provide comments to us. And if you go on our website, we have a dedicated website. There's an opportunity for individuals and organizations to provide comments to us regarding habitat conservation priorities. Probably the most important part of our process that we've set in place is that we have asked the stakeholders, the different groups that are involved in fish, wildlife, habitat, conservation, prairie restoration, wetland restoration, forest preservation and protection and management, to work together to help us out with this first go-around, to bring together the interest, to self-convene an open process that can identify these high-priority, I'll use the term, shovel-ready conservation projects. The goal of this initiative is to bring together a collaborative proposal back to the council that identifies those shovel-ready projects that are ready to go, but they simply can't be implemented simply due to lack of existing funds. And again, an important part of the constitutional amendment is that these funds are only to be supplementing, but not to be replacing existing sources. So that's part of the directive, is to ask to identify those projects that simply can't be funded with the existing resources that are available. And yesterday there was a meeting, for example, many of you may have heard about it or read about it in the paper, of wetland interests. Some 35 to 40 organizations and individuals got together to talk about putting together a proposal to deal with, identify and present back to the council the highest priority wetlands habitat projects that will be presented to the council in February. So looking ahead, we have in February, our meetings are devoted to receiving the proposals. And that's not to say that if you're not working with other groups, we aren't going to listen. It's going to be a very open process. If organizations would like to present their own ideas to us, that's great. They're welcome to do that. We've devoted the 9th of February to hearing proposals on the wetland habitat and the prairie habitat proposals. Again, there are similar collaborative efforts that have started for prairie habitat proposal, a prairie habitat proposal. And then our last meeting in February, the 23rd, we are going to be hearing proposals regarding forest resource funding priorities and fish and wildlife habitat funding priorities. So the month of February, we'll be listening, asking questions to organizations or individuals, the case may be, that are presenting their, again, priority projects that are ready to go but simply are not able to go due to lack of sufficient funding from existing sources. Our month of March will be devoted to developing our recommendations on the appropriations from the Outdoor Heritage Fund in 2010. We have 2 meetings scheduled there, and as I said earlier, I am confident with the help of all the partners. And just as an aside, it's amazing that the different conservation and wildlife and fisheries interests have really come together to help us make this a successful effort. It's not just the 12 members of the council, it's a lot of people behind the scenes that are working hard to identify what is needed to improve habitat in Minnesota. So, I mean, I'm just very thrilled to see the enthusiasm and the support from so many different organizations and individuals. I want to comment just before closing and open to questions, Mr. Chair. One of the things we've been getting a lot of questions about is, what happens if I'm a local conservation organization or a sportsman's club? You know, I can't play with the big boys, so to speak. What do I do? I've got a great habitat improvement project. How do I access potentially funds from the Outdoor Heritage Fund? We have, through 97A, we are required, the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council, to develop a conservation partners program. And that is a matching grant program that's, again, the mission being protect, restore and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, fish, game, wildlife, habitat. But it's focusing on those smaller projects on a matching grant basis. After submitting our recommendations to you, and you will see a recommendation for an initial appropriation to that conservation partners program, the council will be working to develop kind of the details of that program, including the eligibility requirements, the process that people want to apply, that need to follow to apply to seek access to funds for that from that program, and how we might administer that program. So we have a lot of work left to do, but I will tell you that you will be seeing an appropriation recommendation from us for our first round of recommendations for some money to get that program going. We've already received a number of requests from individuals to sporting organizations to small landowner groups who have great ideas for habitat improvement, be it be fish or game, and we want to make sure that we have a process in place to deal with those requests. Just in closing, I want to just let you know that while we've met just three times, we have laid out, I think, a very important and I think will be proven to be a very effective process to get our recommendations to you by April 1. By necessity, we really are constrained. But in doing that, we've identified a number of principles by which we believe the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council wants to operate. And I just want to, they're in that document, but I think it's worth repeating or highlighting a couple of those. Number one, the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council is committed to a process that's timely, getting the recommendations to you and the legislature as requested, transparent to not only you, but the public and the stakeholders involved, and that is accessible and understandable by the public. The last thing we want to do is create the perception that we're doing something on our own and people who are interested in this and just don't know what's going on. And so we're doing all that we can to make sure that our deliberations are obviously well-publicized, our decisions are well-publicized, and people have ready access to the council decision-making. Secondly is that when we look at what we're going to be recommending to you, and I'll close here and then stand for questions, Mr. Chair, is that we really want to focus this first time around. We want to get it right, but we do know that there are a lot of unmet conservation and habitat projects that are out there now. And our goal is to identify those best projects that will produce tangible, enduring results in many different areas of habitat. And so we're going to be looking for the broadest benefits possible. And in doing so, we're going to be also emphasizing the fact that these projects, these proposals need to be grounded in good science regarding habitat and natural resource management. So, Mr. Chair, with that, there's a lot of material that you have in front of you and the committee members. I think at this point, I would stand for questions.
One question before we open up to questions. Dr. Kilgore, could you maybe give us just a brief briefing on staffing and what you're thinking about doing there?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, by law, the 97A, the statute that created the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council, directs the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources to provide the administrative support for the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council. We are recognized in law as a legislative entity. So the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council is a creature of the legislature whose support is provided by an executive branch agency. Given that, we have been graciously given by the Department of Natural Resources interim staff. Mr. Bill Becker is serving as our interim executive director. They've also provided a person to take meeting minutes and recording at our council meetings. Long term, this we need to obviously deal with this issue and make sure that we have the staff that are needed to efficiently operate the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council. So it's an ongoing point of discussion not only among council members but folks outside the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council about what that appropriate staffing arrangement might be.
Sir Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Kilgore, I'm just thinking about all the different jurisdictions that manage public land, and I'm wondering if the group has considered at all making some money available for partnerships with local governments. Example, St. Louis County, where I live, has about 900,000 acres of taxable open land. They have a very good land department that very efficiently manages that, and the county commissioners depend on that land department to actually generate revenue for the county's general fund. Consequently, because they're looked at as a revenue source, I think sometimes they don't intensively manage the land for forestry as much as they should. And I'm thinking of some Norway pine plantations that I know of where they've taken good high gravel soil ridges and planted it in Norway pine to make sure we keep a good diverse forest, otherwise it would all just come back in aspens. But then they walk away and there's no intensive management. There's no releasing of the trees, there's no thinning of the trees, and it just seems like it might be a good idea to make some money available for counties to contract with groups like maybe the MCC to go out and do some more intensive forest management, and at the same time, we'd get some biomass product for renewable energy generation. It seems like it might be a good opportunity, and I think the counties are maybe a good place to look at, because some counties actually are managing a lot of land.
Just Mr. Chairman and Senator Bach, that's an excellent point. The short answer to your question is we haven't discussed that specific idea about a pot of money or availability to local units of government. Everything is on the table right now. We simply haven't got to that point in discussion. Again, we will. Our litmus test will be: does the appropriation is it consistent with the intent, the direction by the Constitution to protect, enhance, restore forests or fish and game wildlife habitat? And if it does, it certainly is available. The things you suggest, Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, are certainly, in my opinion, within the realm of the constitutional direction, with the focus being what it is. I certainly, in my day job, have a lot of experience in my research on the very issue you raised. We have some other experts. Dr. Alan Eck, who's the head of the Department of Forest Resources, is here. And we will tell you that productivity of Minnesota's forest is certainly not nearly what it could be. And when we define productivity, we define it much broader than just wood production or biomass product, but it includes wildlife habitat, includes lots of different things. But with investments, we also do know that through intermediate thinnings, early releases, timber stand improvement, we can greatly enhance the productivity of our forest for all those things. And there are great examples around the world where we can look to and see where that's happening.
So, Mr. Chair, Dr. Kilgore, if a member of the public was watching this hearing and had an idea, how would they get an idea in front of the council for their consideration? Is there a process for that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, we do have a process. We are going to be hearing for this first round of appropriation recommendations from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. On February 23rd, we are devoting the day to hearing proposals regarding forestry and fish game habitat, which really is really the fisheries portion of it, because a lot of those others are subsumed through prairies, wetlands, and forests. But the answer to your question, Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, is on the 23rd of February, we will be entertaining forestry proposals, and I do know there have been a number of organizations that are working together to put a proposal together. That said, we certainly would welcome any proposals along the lines of forest protection, enhancement, or improvement.
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, Dr. Kilgore, there's a lot of people in the general public that were excited about voting for this proposal that maybe aren't a member of some kind of an organization that's maybe kind of in the queue to come and make suggestions, and I think it might be helpful if there were some kind of a public notice process so people that have some interest in it had an opportunity to, at a minimum, make some suggestions.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, that's an excellent suggestion. We've tried to do that through, we've sent out press releases, we've got a website. But we certainly can do more, and we'll attempt to do that. I just want to go back to this Conservation Partners Program, because depending on the scale of the project, it may be that it's more appropriate for that individual or that smaller club or organization to apply for some funding through that program. Again, we haven't developed it yet, but the intent by reading the law is to possibly along the lines that you're suggesting for maybe things that are a little more smaller scale. But certainly if you're talking about county tax forfeited land management, you know, that's a big enterprise. You and I both know that that's almost 3 million acres of land statewide. And we would certainly welcome any proposal from the Minnesota Association of County Land Commissioners or others regarding forestry on the 23rd.
Mr. Chairman, I want to make a comment first about the staffing for the council, and then I have a question for Dr. Kramer. As you're well aware, because you're involved in the discussions, Senator Chaudhry was, many of us, about the staffing for the council. And because of the short time period between the election and when they'd be required to be doing real work, there would not have been time to advertise, hire staff to go through this first several months of organization and work. So we wrote into law the Department of Natural Resources to provide that funding the first several months. And I think it was our expectation that they would be hiring staff to do this work sometime in the near future, similar to the Citizens Legislative Commission of Minnesota resources. And I want to be sure that was put on the record, even though I know you know that. For some of our citizens who are overly suspicious and cynical, perhaps, they view it because it was being staffed by the Department of Natural Resources, the council was merely an appendage to the Department of Natural Resources, which is not our intent, which I expect will not happen, and I suspect also the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources doesn't want that to happen.
Thank you for that clarity.
And the question I have, and it's parallel to the parallel to the concern that Senator Bach brought up. It would be easy for the council and for us to spend money to buy more land, to buy fee title or buy easement, permit easement, and say, well, you know, we've acquired another 1,000 or 10,000, 15,000 acres of land, whatever it would be. But when I hear many of my constituents want better management of those wildlife management areas and those restored wetlands when they are acquired so that they are enhanced, that the weeds are controlled, that there's good management, there's burns conducted when there needs to be burns on native prairie, that type of management. And just kind of a question and a comment combined into one, are you going to be working on those kind of issues? And you talked about how money might be going out perhaps to primarily volunteer organizations to help them help you.
Mr. Chair and Senator Frederickson, excellent point. Yes, we have, in our limited time, have talked about that very issue. I can assure you that our recommendations coming back to you in April will not be $78 million worth of acquisition. There is a concern that we have a mix of where it makes sense and it's a high conservation or habitat priority. Maybe acquisition is the right way to go or easement, but also we have a backlog of those existing public lands that simply have not been managed appropriately due to lack of funds or whatever. And we would expect that our proposals coming into us in February, a significant component will be to help do some of the restoration work that you, Senator Frederickson, referred to, which is to try and make those more productive systems, be it a wetland or a prairie or a forest, with the existing land base that the public has right now.
Other questions? Senator Shaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Kilgore. It sounds like the council has gotten off to a good start, particularly given the short time frame in this first year. Not enough people realize that there is a significant lag time between when the money starts actually being collected and when you have to do your work. So I think the council is doing its utmost to produce the chicken and the egg at the same time, and that's not so easy to do. So compliments on that. With regards to some of the specific points of the actual constitutional amendment, you talked about the the very specific tasks that the amendment gave to the council, the issue was brought up just now about management of forests, And I think I would agree with those types of efforts, as long as that management is, coincides with restoring, protecting, and enhancing the forest. So it's not simply, it doesn't say manage prairies, forests, and habitat. It says restore, protect, and enhance. And in as much as managing a forest or for timber production or some other, a prairie project involves restoring, protecting, and enhancing that area, I would agree that that is an appropriate part of your charge. Only if that project is not substituting current interests, whether it be by a county or another organization. So, and that brings me to the other specific charge in the constitutional provision. You did allude to it, and I appreciate that. But I would appreciate some more extended comment about the very specific and explicit charge and provision that the money under this section shall supplement traditional sources and may not be used as a substitute. You did allude to that, and I'm sure you're aware of the issue. What is the council going to do, or how is it going to approach the specific issue of whether a project is being sought to substitute a traditional source? Will the council just simply say no? Will it change the nature of the project? Have you had those discussions? Are these considerations still swirling, or has something been decided?
Mr. Chair and Senator Sodre, that was a very important point that you raised. It has been a point of discussion in the three meetings of the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council to date. And my guess is that it will continue to occur as a discussion point at every meeting. You're absolutely right. This notion that the funds from the Outdoor Heritage Fund can only be used to supplement and not replace. We do have, as one of our four legislators, Representative Rick Hansen, who I believe chairs the Legislative Audit Commission, and I know he is seeking some clarification from the legislative auditor about what that distinction is. If you look at page 2 of your document, which lays out our process, we have some criteria. We call these on page 2 minimum criteria for funding requests, and I apologize, they are bulleted and not enumerated. But if you look about two-thirds of the way down, it says, in developing its recommendations to the legislature for appropriations from the OHF, Outdoor Heritage Fund, that the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council will only consider funding requests that, and bullet number 1, 2, 3, 4, 11th bullet down says, seeks funding to supplement and not replace customary or usual funding sources. Now, that's a very broad statement, but nonetheless, I think it indicates the commitment that this council has made to ensuring that anything that we are recommending to you as an appropriation is above and beyond what would otherwise be funded through normal appropriations. That said, obviously, it's not a black and white issue, particularly when we're talking about habitat or conservation projects that might be funded through bonding dollars, where funding is either, it ebbs and flows. Some years there may be no money, some years there may be a fairly generous amount of money for, let's say, wildlife management area acquisition. But it is something we are still, to use your word, Senator, circling around, and we have not resolved that, but I can assure you and members of the committee that is one of the things that is paramount in our recommendations, to make sure that what we recommend is not robbing Peter to pay Paul, and that it is money from this fund that would otherwise would be used for projects that would otherwise simply not occur.
And just to follow up on that, Dr. Kilgore, will there be an extended eye towards efforts, budgetary efforts outside of the council and this amendment that will look to actions of other entities' efforts to dry up sources, so knowing that there is this council that exists that can pick up the slack?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, yes, and obviously We have four members of the Outdoor Heritage Council who are certainly going to be watching that and keeping us posted as well. I know for a fact, Senator, hearing your remarks at the DNR roundtable about the concern you have raised about supplementing versus replacing, and we greatly appreciate the commitment that you have made to ensuring the best you can that that will not happen. So I think the answer to your question, the best response, is the fact that everyone is aware of it. We do have four of our 12 members who are legislators who will have much greater insight about bills that are being proposed, proposed budget appropriations, who can give us that information so that we can act in a more informed environment about what's happening outside the outdoor heritage.
Another question.
Yes, Senator
Shaw. And then following the same along the constitutional provision, there's the other pretty explicit provision that talks about land acquired by fee must be open to the public taking of fish and game. Has there been a discussion amongst the council about how that provision will be specifically applied? What kind of attention has been paid to this particular part of the constitutional provision?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, we have discussed it, but we have not given it a lot of time. Both council members believe it's a given in the Constitution. The question that we have talked about in our discussions has been, does that refer to fee simple title acquisition only? Does that refer to acquisition of a portion of that bundle of property rights, namely a conservation easement? But beyond that, Mr. Chair and Senator Chaudhry and members of the committee, we simply haven't had a more in-depth discussion about interpreting it beyond as you have described in the constitutional amendment.
Thank you. I'll pull out some of my other questions.
Okay. And other questions? Well, Senator Chaudhry, go ahead.
I appreciate your discussion of the matching grant program and the attention that you're paying to it. It's a difficult charge given the time frame. It's a new concept, and you're requiring individuals who don't have the capacity of larger organizations to respond quickly, but your efforts in advertising to sportsmen clubs and other conservation clubs to get their proposals in, I think, would be very helpful. Even in larger organizations, there was, I discovered, question and hesitancy about what this means. And I think I had to kind of juice them up a little bit to let them know that that's what this is for. And part of it is this culture of conservation funding that we've never had. And people kind of don't understand what an opportunity has been presented to them because it's never been there before. So this idea that Senator Bach was bringing up about making sure individuals and local groups are included, I think people need to be told that, not just welcome that they can apply and provide the forum, but I think people need to be told that this exists for them, this matching grant program, however you end up developing it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, we certainly will do that, and we would welcome any help and advice we can. As I mentioned, after we deliver our recommendations in April, we'll devote time to actually developing that program. So when funds do become available later this summer, beginning in August, which is when the first deposits are made in the Outdoor Heritage Fund, we'll be able to start implementing that program. I'd like to make a comment or two, because I think your point is really on the mark. Part of, at least as I look at the Conservation Partners Program, it's not only to provide access to organizations or individuals that might not have the wherewithal to do larger conservation and habitat projects, but I really see it as a great opportunity, a great venue to connect Minnesota citizens with conservation and habitat. I think a connection that we frankly have lost over the last, in my lifetime. I think back to the days when my father took me out hunting and where we are today, and I think we have become an urbanized environment. We have lost that connection, and to be quite frank, I think people that live outside the Twin Cities felt left out of the whole decision-making process, and I'm hoping that at least some portion of this program can help reconnect and engage citizens in conservation and habitat management. And maybe this isn't the only approach, but I do think that this is certainly a step in the right direction to get people excited about it, committed to conservation, that they otherwise wouldn't have that excitement or commitment to.
Mr. Chair, it's an opportunity that I'm discovering that people just never dared to dream. And now we have this, and so we need to let people know that that this dream is come to fruition. Another on that opportunity angle is the notion that the money in this habitat has no other greater application than the interests of hunters and maybe some anglers. It seems to me that we need to realize that all of these efforts have as much impact on the environment in general as any other program, particularly cleaning our water. When we talk about wetlands or other types of projects, has there been consideration amongst the council that some of these things that we call habitat or have been perhaps promoted by sportsman organizations may just be better off, and not only better off, but greatly enhanced if they were funded in whole or at least in part by the Clean Water Fund?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, another excellent point. We have had that conversation. We have not, to be quite frank, had an in-depth conversation about that. One of the reasons for not having that in-depth conversation is, as this, Mr. Chair mentioned in his comments at the outset, the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council was the only advisory body to the legislature on the additional funds, whether it be for parks and trails, arts, clean water, or conservation and wildlife fisheries habitat. So we are in 97A, the statute that creates the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council, encouraged to work with and to quote, I can find it here, Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, the council may work with the Clean Water Council to identify projects that are consistent with both the purpose of the Outdoor Heritage Fund and purpose of the Clean Water Council, assuming that they have a responsibility to advise on the uses of the Clean Water Fund. Certainly that's something that we will be doing, but regardless of who that is, we all know that what we do on the land affects the water and vice versa. We also know that when we manage a forest resource, for example, as an example, we not only manage for game habitat, but we manage for a tremendous amount of other fauna and flora that simply is not considered traditionally with game. And so whether it be a young aspen forest that might be producing woodcock and rough grouse and white-tailed deer habitat, it also has a tremendous impact on many non-game bird species and small mammals as well.
Just from the perspective, Mr. Chair, of just one senator, I don't think that the council or its stakeholders should be shy about telling the Clean Water Council or the legislature that something you been considering is truly a clean water project, and the legislature that's currently making the appropriation should really recognize the true contribution of some of these projects, such as RIM and WRP.
Mr. Chair and Senator Chaudhry, we are also having to deal, or we'll likely have to deal with the same issue with regard to parks and trails. And we've already heard some conversations about the uses of the fund for parks acquisition or land acquisition in the name of habitat. And the same litmus test has to apply. Where would that particular management, restoration, improvement, acquisition best be applied? Through the Outdoor Heritage Fund or through the appropriate fund for the parks and trails?
Dr. Kilgore, is the council planning on doing some field trips, so to speak?
Mr. Chair, the thermometer has risen a bit. We plan to do some. Obviously, our initial thoughts were greater than what we realized we could do between now and April 1, but certainly once our immediate task is at hand of getting you some recommendations post-April 1st, we do want to plan to do a couple things. We need to get out into rural Minnesota and have a greater presence. We simply haven't had the time afforded to do that. We also need to go out. We're going to be having presentations about management, restoration, enhancement work on wetlands, prairies, and forests next Monday. We need to go out, and all council members need to see what that entails. When we hear about a wetland restoration project, what does that look like? When we talk about enhancing a wetland that's been neglected, or let's say a wildlife management area that simply has not, due to lack of funds, been managed properly or appropriately or at all, what does it mean? What is that with and without of having that management on the landscape? And so to do that, we need to get out and about, and we certainly plan to do that. Recognizing that our second round of recommendations for fiscal year 2011 are due to the legislature by the end of this calendar year, so in less than 12 months, we'll be making another recommendation on an additional some $75 to $80 million worth of habitat projects.
And I sense a lot of support for this Conservation Partners plan that you're going through. Did you say that some of that criteria or what's going to be needed is going to be ready by April 1st? Or
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, what we will do, again, I can't speak with complete certainty on behalf of the council, but it's my every expectation that our initial recommendation will have a recommended appropriation from that initial $70 to $80 million in the Outdoor Heritage Fund appropriated to the Conservation Partners Program. But that will be about all that we will have done in that area, because we will be focusing on the bill itself regarding appropriations. Once we get past April 1, we will move as a council to develop the process that by which people or organizations can apply for those funds, the criteria we're going to use to evaluate those proposals, how we're actually going to administer and manage those, because you can imagine there's going to be dozens and dozens over time, hundreds of projects that are likely going to be proposed, and we need to put together a thoughtful process so that we can manage it effectively and successfully. And that will occur after April 1.
And I realize that you haven't really fleshed this out yet, Dr. Pogar, but who would you visualize would be dispensing those funds?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that is a great question. The statute indicates that the council shall develop the Conservation Partners Program. It may be that the council would be seeking an appropriation back to itself to actually administer it. We may find that it makes more sense to have it administered by an existing entity. Part of our discussions on Monday that I failed to mention to you earlier that we're going to be hearing on Monday are about small grants programs that exist in Minnesota, specifically related to conservation. So we'll know what programs exist out there, and within that context, make a decision whether that it makes sense for the Conservation Partners Program to be administered by the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council or recommend it be administered by some other existing entity.
The advisor to my left is the one that filled me in on that. You're going to have to do some thinking about how you would dispense it. I don't think once we appropriate it, we could probably appropriate it back. Am I correct there? Correct? Well,
Mr. Chairman, the issue is that once the money, this group's, their sole function is to make recommendations to the legislature. So the question is, and they're in the legislative branch, so they can't do administrative functions. They cannot give out grants to individual parties unless they do it by recommendation to the legislature, and then the money's appropriate for that specific purpose. We've had the same issue with the LCCMR. But the issue is, and I think Mr. Kilgore mentioned the possibility of them giving out the Conservation Partnership grants directly. My understanding is that wouldn't be possible. It would have to be another entity like DNR or some type of administrative agency. And also the criteria, the issue is going to be, is that the criteria either needs to be in the law or else it has to be developed by the entity that's going to be giving out the grants. If the council wants to place criteria on the grant, either has to be in the law or it just has to be a recommendation to who's ever doing it, because they really don't have any of the authority to specify what has to be in the grant program beyond the recommendation the legislature put in the law.
Well, anyway, it's a great idea. I'm sure you'll, as you say, you'll flesh it out.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you, Mr. Knopf, for enlightening me about what we can and cannot do. And certainly, obviously, we need to make our recommendations within the bounds of law, but we certainly want to put together a program that is easily accessible. I mean, the bottom line is a program that sportsmen and women and local clubs can access. They know how to do it. It's easy, it's transparent, and it's a process that doesn't take forever and a day, but they can get a response fairly quickly about whether or not we're able to fund that proposal. So with that in mind, whether it's administered through, for example, the Department of Natural Resources, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, or some other entity, that remains to be seen. But we've been talking about some criteria about what the outcome is of that program, and I've just highlighted kind of those outcomes.
Thank you. Senator Shadrick.
Well, we had the discussion in developing this, whether this type of council could directly appropriate, and I think we agreed that it could not. Technically, it could not. The question is, if there's a legislative bill with the recommendations of the council, can that have a direct appropriation to the Viking Sportsman's Club, for example, in Alexandria, Minnesota? That is allowable, is it not?
Senator Shadrick, yes. As long as it's in the bill itself, the legislature can make the appropriation as a part of it.
So it sounds like the council would just say internally, we devote this much to the Conservation Partners matching grants, and then these are the groups that we recommend get this amount after reviewing what they're doing, their projects. And then we, in the legislature, just write that into law. Or you can also probably choose to just say we devote X million dollars to the DNR for the Conservation Partners Program, and then dictate that these grants be distributed to those small clubs, with the DNR just being the pass-through agency. Sounds like those are the couple of options you can consider.
Chair Bach.
Mr. Knopf, is there anything in the law from an accountability perspective? I'm just thinking, let's push 5 years down the road, and some legislator recommends to the legislative auditor that we do an audit of the money that's been appropriated or granted through this constitutional amendment, that we get a good clean auditor's report that comes back. So I'm wondering if there's any kind of a auditing procedure or make sure that groups that receive money from this actually perform what they said they were going to do, so down the road we don't get into trouble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, it's in subdivision 6 of the section that was enacted. The council shall select an independent auditor to audit the Outdoor Heritage Fund expenditures every 2 years to ensure that the money is spent to restore, protect, and enhance the forest game and wildlife. So it does. There is specific in the statute that was enacted last year. There's also the legislative oversight of the council activities. But I think the big thing is that that audit that needs to occur every 2 years.
And Mr. Knopf, does that come out of the 1% or does that come out of the 99%?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, that's not clear. I know people have been talking about the 1% a lot. I mean, that's in the statute. That's what was recommended and part of the statute last year. In the bill that appropriates money for this, the legislature can appropriate whatever it deems necessary for the functions that are there, whether it's by above the 1% or not. I mean, the legislature still has that authority to do whatever is necessary. So people get kind of caught up on that 1%. I know it's in the statute, but it's not permanent. And that's something that can be overridden by bill appropriating money. So it's not clear whether, but I think it's assumed since the council's selecting the auditor that's part of the cost of the council, and the money would be appropriated to the council for the purposes of the audit. And under current law, I would say that would fall within the 1%. But like I said, I wouldn't get too caught up on the 1%.
Senator
Fredericks.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, it would be my expectation and hope that when an organization receives money as a result of recommendations of the SARG Council, that there'd be a work program document that goes with it, and the staff of the Heritage Council would be looking at their work programs, comparing what they said they were going to do with that money versus what they're actually delivering. And if they stop delivering what they said they were going to, if they would stop the flow of money at that point until they come back and comply with Ed Work program. That ultimately is what could keep them out of trouble and get money misspent. And that's what LCMR has been doing for many, many years. And over the years, they have stopped the flow of money to organizations that have strayed from the intent of the legislature out of those work programs.
I think that accountability is really important.
Yeah. I do.
Other questions? Senator Shaw.
Mr. Chair. Dr. Kilgore, what has been the council's discussion, or what does it think it might do about this concern being raised about the lack of formal geographic representation from northern Minnesota, and the talk amongst some northern counties that they've requested exemption from the tax because of that lack of representation?
Mr. Chair and Senator Chaudhry, we have discussed that. Certainly, in our deliberations, we are looking for the best projects for habitat, regardless of where they are, whether they're in Pipestone County or whether they're up in Cook County. So the fact that we don't have someone, I might be viewed, for example, Senator Chaudhry, as the northernmost Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council member, obviously not latitude-wise, but probably closest to the heart of northern Minnesota, possibly. And I live just 20 miles from here, or less. But I will tell you that we have a number of members of the council who have a strong professional background in the areas that are near and dear to the hearts of people in northern Minnesota. Myself, my area is in forest resources. We have Bob Schroeder, who has had a formal education and has worked in forestry. We have people who have done major forest land projects. So while we don't have someone from northern Minnesota, northeastern Minnesota specifically, we certainly have people who have their interest at heart at the council, even if we may not live there. Except, Mr. Chair, maybe during a 4th of July weekend up at Burroughs Lake in northern Itasca County.
Well, Senator Chaudhry and Dr. Kilgore, being a representative of northern Minnesota, at this point, I'm very comfortable with the way things are going, but I think it behooves us as a council and as a legislature to be mindful of the fact that so many of the natural resources are in some of those northern counties, and appropriately work with them.
I agree with Dr. Kilgore's assessment reply, and I'm just wondering if that's helped to settle down some of these counties that have raised that concern. It's the issue and the attention more than the person. I mean, you might have someone from northern Minnesota who lives there permanently. I'm a councilman. They may not actually give a rip about northern Minnesota's natural resources. So to me, it's the issue and the values and principles that are most important, as you've demonstrated. But that aside, how has that notion been communicated or helped to pacify some of these folks who do have a concern, the actual geographical concern?
Mr. Chair and Senator Chaudhry, it's a difficult argument to convince in a short period of time that while we don't have geographic representation of their interests at the table, our hearts and our interests are with them. I think that the proof will be over time, starting with April 1 when we make our recommendations about whether or not they view northern Minnesota as being left out of the conservation and habitat picture in terms of the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And I don't think there's a council member around that would say that that's going to be their intention. So I'm hoping over time we can demonstrate to them through our recommendations and through our deliberations that it is for all of Minnesota, even though we may not have interest physically living in all geographic regions of the state.
Good. Any other questions here?
Well, just to add to that, yeah. Mr. Chair, just add that in the council recommendations, the law requires that your recommendations directly relate to the prevention of forest fragmentation and encourage forest consolidation. regardless, let's just say there was no one on the council who lived north of I-94. They would still have to, by law, pay attention to the issues that are most critical to Minnesota.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions from here? Is there any other, and thank you, Dr. Kilgore.
Thank you.
Is there any other testimony that you might have heard? Yes.
Mr. Chair, my name is Bob Schroeder, I'm a member of the Heritage Council. Thank you for having us here. I'll try and be brief and address some of the issues that, just some of the questions that were addressed here.
Thanks, Mr.
Chair. My view of the recommendations, of the law is that we have target areas, wetland areas, and ORs, and we have activities, enhancement, restoration, and protection. And how we put together a matrix on that basis is, I think, part of what the council will be deliberating on. Senator Chaudhry, specifically, you talked about the issue of management versus restoration and enhancement, those kind of activities. It is arguably a little bit gray, the difference between what is a restoration activity and what is an enhancement. We tried to define those in the document on page 4 as a guideline for the council as we consider those recommendations. So we are mindful of some of the issues regarding those activities and how they interrelate or not. Senator Fredrickson, the issue of the personnel matters are still something that we need to, frankly, work out. But the law is, frankly, split. We have the council is a part of the legislative branch. You have the staffing comes from the executive branch. And we may consider an alternative recommendation that the legislature could consider that settles it one way or the other, so that I think that we have some clarity perhaps around that. And any thoughts you have on that would be helpful. But that's one thing that is still an open issue for us. I'm sorry that Senator Bach is not here, but one factor that the council is considering is the issue of taxes. If we fund activities regarding protection where we take the fee ownership, there are obviously tax implications. We have not settled, but I want to be sure to bring that to the Senate's consideration as one of the things that you will have to wrestle with when we make our recommendations. And then also I expect that we may, the council may consider providing a legislative cleanup language, perhaps, that may deal with the issue of the personnel matter. Open meeting law is a factor for us that we certainly want to be as transparent as possible to the public, but we also want to be make it so burdensome that for us to meet. So those are just a couple of things to address questions that the committee has.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
Thank you for that information. Any other testimony? If not, thank you all for being here today, and until we meet again.